I would like to welcome everybody to today's meeting of the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development for the City of Tucson. I would like to call this meeting to order. The Commission on Equitable Housing and Development meeting has now commenced. It is November 6th at 4:02 p.m. This is a virtual meeting, so we ask that you mute yourselves until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in using the call-in number, to unmute to speak, dial *6 on your phone, and please only use the chat function to request to speak. Also, to comply with the state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by way of roll call using audio. And with that, I will call the roll. Maggie Amato-Tellez.
Present.
Mindy Bernstein.
Present.
Vicky Cusino. Didn't see Vicky. Is she here? Logan Havens. I don't see Logan either. Serena Warake.
Present.
Lori Meserbo.
Present.
Ann Miskey. Did not see Ann. Robert Ojeda.
Present.
Tisha Tallman. I think Tisha might not be here today. Don't see her. Alan Solot. Jim Toefel. I know Jim is not going to be here. Ray Winch.
I think Ray,
Present.
oh, there's Ray. Key Ray.
Okay, next we have Kenny Wong.
Present.
And then Jay Young. That is me, and I am here. Ex officio members, Ann Chaneka.
Here.
Orrin Manning.
Present.
Marcos Ismael.
Here.
And Michael Edmonds.
I'm here.
All right, we have a quorum and we will move forward. The October meeting minutes, has everybody had a chance to read over them? Are there any corrections? If there are no corrections, I will entertain a motion to approve the October minutes.
I move we approve the minutes. Okay,
Okay,
I'll
we have
second.
a motion from Robert and a second from, was that Maggie?
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the October minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay or no or something to that effect. Any abstentions? The October meeting minutes have been approved. And with that, I will just take a minute here to review our agenda today. So we've got the usual stuff, call to the audience. Then we have the Pima County Regional Housing Strategy and Funding Plan presentation and discussion. We've got that for about 30 minutes. Then we have about 45 minutes for our discussion on the recommendations to mayor and council that you have all had a chance to review in a memo. And then we have a few minutes to review our schedule for 2026. And then closing out the meeting, we have city and county updates and next steps with the hopes of adjourning by 6 o'clock. So that's what we've got on tap for today. And with that, I will move on to the call to the audience. The call to the audience is limited to 3 minutes per speaker and a total of 10 minutes. All speakers must share their name to be recorded in the meeting minutes. And please remember, the call to the audience may not result in discussion with members of CEHD. No legal action may take place during the call to the audience, and speakers may not be disruptive. CEHD members may only respond to criticism and request that items be placed on a future agenda for discussion. And finally, members of the audience may still participate on agenda items as per the bylaws of CEHD. Is there anyone in the audience at this time who would like to speak?
I'm not seeing any hands up yet, Jay, but also wanted to make note of the record that Alan Solot joined at 4:04 p.m.
Welcome, Alan.
Thank you.
Anybody in the audience that would like to speak? Going once, going twice. Okay, looks like there's nobody in the audience to speak. And with that, we are at the Pima County Regional Housing Strategy and Funding Plan presentation and discussion. Who do we have for that presentation?
Mr. Chairman, Nicole Fife with Pima County.
Hey, Nicole, take it away.
Thank you. And I think I'm sharing my screen here, unless your staff usually does that. So I'm going to go ahead.
Hey, Nicole. I just gave you sharing permission. Oh, so you should excellent. Be good now.
It keeps telling me disabled share, only the host can share.
Is it working now? Okay,
yep,
great.
Yep. And then just let me know when you see it.
It is coming up and we can see it.
Yep. All right, great. So appreciate the time with this commission. We've come and mentioned this a few times to you that we're sort of working towards this. So this is part of the regional housing strategy and funding plan. This is just the funding plan portion of it. Made a similar presentation to our Pima County Regional Housing Commission on October 17th, and then we're going to bring this back to them again at the next meeting. And I'm going to go to the next slide. So the process so far regarding the Regional Housing Strategy and Funding Plan, we started this back in March. The purpose is to meet housing needs that have been identified in the housing study, basically development of more market rate and subsidized housing. The city of Tucson had a similar housing study done just for the city of Tucson that I've heard Ann and others report onto this group quite frequently. And then for our housing commission, we had one, a similar study done by Echo Northwest, you know, countywide. So we have similar numbers, but at a countywide basis. The purpose of this is also to meet needs identified in our new Board of Supervisors policy, which is a $250 million 10-year funding policy, which is both to build more and keep people housed. So it's both of those purposes. So far, we've presented 9 different strategies to our county's Regional Housing Commission. We've also had a lot of interaction with various cities and towns, either through our commission meetings, since we have representations from the cities and towns on our commission, as well as workshops and individual meetings, and just completed a road show with Echo Northwest. They were out here for Tucson Meet Yourself. That weekend, they did a lot of events soliciting input on the housing study. So the funding plan, this is only focusing on a few high-level strategies that require funding. So there'll be a lot of strategies, just like in the city's HAST plan, that don't require funding. If you're thinking of planning and zoning, and I know, Corin, that's a little bit of funding still, but not big funding for those. So we're really looking at, you know, how do we guide housing funding allocations over the next 10 years? How do we integrate the $250 million from the new board policy of Pima Counties with federal resources that are coming into the county, to the city of Tucson and Marana, and that we are, you know, hopeful will continue at similar levels that they have been. I'll just say that for now. Another purpose is to transition our eviction prevention programming and bridge housing at the Craycroft from expiring federal and state funding to our county, $250 million of funding. And then throughout this process, we're trying to balance the need for building more housing with keeping people housed, depending, you know, year to year over the 10 years on the economy and so on. There may be some times where we're spending more on the keeping people housed side and less on building more, and other times when there may be more opportunities to maximize our dollars on the building more side. Also trying to further the City of Tucson and Pima County climate initiatives and inform the annual cash flow for our housing funds. Down at the bottom here, I just want to say what the funding plan excludes, because the City of Tucson and TPCH fund a significant amount when it comes to public housing, permanent supportive housing, and long-term rental vouchers. So that is beyond the scope of this plan. There's an asterisk there because there may be an ask from TPCH on permanent supportive housing, and I'll get to that as we go through this. So this is the funding plan is like a giant spreadsheet, and I've tried to kind of pull some parts pull it apart a little bit for you so that you can actually see it on the screen. But so you'll see here, we have our Build More category and Keep People Housed category. The strategies are split into for Build More low-income rental and low-income ownership. Under Keep People Housed, we have two strategies. It's low-income home repair and replacement and then homeless prevention. And then those are further broken out by tactics or approaches that get more specific. So taking those same category strategies and tactics now, you can see an additional category here is the target income level. So this is the household income level that we would be targeting for each of those strategies and tactics. An estimated 10-year need, and just for example, this 30,584 units, that came from our housing study. So over the next 10 years, Echo Northwest estimated that we need another 30,000 units of low-income rental housing. So that's where that number came from, for example, in the 0 to 60% AMI category. They also estimated we needed 1,658 units in the 60 to 80% area median income category, and that's what we've pegged to home ownership. So those are where those numbers are coming from. Some of these other 10-year need numbers had to come from program managers and experts in those areas because they didn't come from the housing study itself. So there's extensive footnotes that we can go into if we need to show you how we came up with these 10-year needs. The target unit households, this is how many either units or households we're saying that we think we can fund and achieve and support during this 10-year period based on the cost per unit and the total cost. The percent of need column then is just the math. So the number of households and units that we think we will build and serve out of the 10-year need. So for example, when Echo Northwest said we need 30,000 units of low-income rental housing over the next 10 years, we think that this plan with both the county's new funding source and our federal funding, we can meet 20% of the need. That's not 80% of the need, but it's still significant in my mind. Cost per units are over here. So sometimes the cost per unit was informed also by Eckert Northwest. So they did put together some performance for us for certain ones. So they looked at low-income rental housing that was supported by the low-income housing tax credits, and estimated that the gap that the county would need, as well as, you know, using the city's home funds and so on, would be about $20,000 a unit gap to generate and support those 4,640 units if low-income housing tax credits were available over this time period. The 60,000 new unit is for units that are built without low-income housing tax credits, so they're considerably more expensive. And that gap is our experience at the county in the last 3 years, and how much of a gap we needed to award to make the low-income housing tax credits work. So then you have the total cost in this column and the share of the $250 million county housing funds in this column. And I'm gonna switch over to the other end of the table now. I'm sorry. Am I still in?
You're good.
Am I good? Nope. Can you see that? Okay, so this is showing the federal sources that are going into this table. So for Pima County, we have rent and utility, rapid rehousing, home repair, our home consortium dollars here for the city of Tucson, home repair, the pro housing grant, the price grant. Town of Marana now gets a share of federal funding for home repair, and TPCH's rapid rehousing funds. You do not have to be able to read this, but I'm just showing you that the footnotes to this table are here to show you how we got to all of those numbers. And so this is an overview. So the 10-year investment in this funding plan totals $414 million, $250 from the new funding source, $164 million from the variety of federal funding sources that we anticipate, hope, I don't know what the best word is to use in this environment, will continue to be received in this community. Then broken out by Build More and Keeping People Housed, it shows the distribution overall and by the county funding. And then this was a question that came out from our housing commission was, does this plan increase service levels or maintain service levels? And so I just want to point out it increases service levels or, you know, number of units built and so on for every category except for EELS, our emergency eviction legal services program, and bridge housing, being the Craycroft and the city's Wildcat. In those cases, we're just transitioning those efforts from federal and state funding sources to the county's funding source, and we're maintaining the same level of service. But otherwise, all of the other categories would see an increase in service as a result of this funding plan. This is just digging a little bit more into the build more category and then we'll go into the keeping people housed category. It's just a little bit more focused from that table. So you can see that these were the tactics that were listed in the table, how many units we think we can achieve and the cost per unit. Overall, what the impact is, again, we think we'll meet about 20% of the need for households with 0 to 60% AMI and about 30% of the need for households with between 60 and 80% AMI. This is a table just to show you how this ties back to the Echo Northwest Housing Study. So this is where those numbers came from when I said we had like 30,000 units that we were aiming to, that we had a need for over the next 10 years. If you add these all up, you will get to 30,000. Keeping people housed. Again, our focus is on home repair, renovations, and replacement. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the home repair and weatherization program, the mobile home replacement and major renovations. This is mostly the price grant. And then the county's $250 million additional funding source will put a little bit more into this, but mostly this is the price grant. And then homeless prevention and bridging to housing. This is our eviction prevention, our EELS program, rent and utility assistance, the Craycroft and the Wildcat, rapid rehousing, and a new hub. And I just want to stop for a second on the hub, because looking at your materials and the recommendations that you're going to be considering to mayor and council, I believe one of the items gets into like a centralized referral portal, like a centralized place and group of people that are doing referrals. And this is what we're suggesting, that we put about $300,000 a year, $3 million over the 10 years into a hub. And so your recommendations may further inform what that hub looks like. So in working with the City of Tucson staff and TPCH, they had specific requests in this funding plan. One request was to move the operational funding for the Wildcat over to the county's funding source. So if I understand correctly, the City of Tucson has one more year of either federal or state funding, I can't remember which, for the Wildcat, and then does not have a plan for how to fund that beyond that. So we have budgeted in this plan $1.1 million a year for 9 years for the Wildcat. Part of this is because the Wildcat is now serving a similar purpose to the county's Craycroft, in that it's providing temporary housing for primarily families, which is what the target clientele is for the Craycroft. So we see this as very similar. The other ask was for gap funding for the development of 1,000 units of rental housing. So the city and the cities of Tucson's development arm over, I think it's probably the next 5 years. So this request will probably grow a little bit in the hopper to develop about another 1,000 units of rental housing, which is fantastic, and would have a gap of about $25 million. So when we did the math, this works out to a little bit over $20,000 per unit, which is pretty consistent with what we were expecting. And so we see that this would be, you know, it would be great to be able to meet some of those, some of the rental housing development needs, you know, through the city. The last ask was from TBCH and has to do with the concern that the federal funding for permanent supportive housing may be significantly reduced. Earlier on, I said in the presentation that this plan was not to fund permanent supportive housing, public housing, and the rental vouchers. However, we understand that that's a super high need population. If federal funding is significantly reduced for permanent supportive housing. What we will say in the plan is that we will make a good faith effort to work with TPCH to see what we can do. Maybe it would be, you know, reallocating some funds so that we could temporarily offset that loss. But we will do our best to assist in that area. There obviously are a lot of challenges and considerations with this plan, rising construction costs and inflation, a huge uncertainty in state and federal funding. We don't know what's going to happen with low-income tax credits and the private activity bond market, balancing both our long-term development goals with our short-term crisis responses, depending on how the economy goes. We have to look at various cash flows for the county's affordable housing funds because it wasn't built to just provide $25 million a year over 10 years. It's a 3 cent over 3 cent property tax increase over time. And so we're working with our finance department to see what we can do from a cash flow basis with that. And then we just all need to keep working together on this. So for today, we're presenting to this commission and really would like this commission's feedback. I can't say enough how much almost all of this, a far majority of these funds will be spent in the city of Tucson. We know that. And so we really, really want this commission's participation and input on this. We will be presenting this again to the county's Regional Affordable Housing Commission in a couple of weeks. We will then finalize both the housing strategy and the funding plan and ask the commission to adopt it in December and then go to the Board of Supervisors in February. That's at least the timeline that we're working with right now. And that's it.
Thanks so much, Nicole. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Yeah, go ahead, Mindy.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for doing so much work and research on this plan. And I appreciate that the county is looking at providing services for our citizens. My reactivity is around seeing 20% coverage or 60% coverage when I yearn to see 100% and wonder where, if there's funding from other sources that will bring us closer to 80%, 90%, 100%. The work is beautiful. I'm sad to see such low percentages of our need covered. And that's not in, I've got the word, senior moment. That's not in saying anything bad about the plan. The plan's beautiful. It's just not enough. That's what I wanted to say. Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Nicole.
And if I could respond to you, Mindy, I totally agree. I think it was disheartening for many of us as we started to sort of play with the numbers and everything to see that we couldn't meet a higher amount of the need. I do think if we have a plan like this in place, we had met with the Lincoln Land Institute, which represents social investors and philanthropists in certain areas, maybe 6 months ago before we had this in place. And they were suggesting something like this because once we can show what we're doing on, you know, and we can show an investor, you could actually meet another 10% of the need and it would cost X. They can see exactly where they would be, like, you know, where they could put their effort and how it could be of benefit. I haven't worked with philanthropists and social investors at all, but I'm hoping that may be a way that we can address additional need.
Go ahead, Anne.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mindy. Thanks, Nicole. I will say something that is in the city update that I feel like is related to this conversation. I mean, Pima County, in terms of what they've committed to, in my opinion, is pretty incredible, despite it only being 20%, but $250 million for 10 years is no small commitment on their effort. And so I do appreciate that component here. And one thing just to bring up, so, and I'm happy to talk about this more during the city update, but the city is hosting budget forums to talk about funding in particular and housing. So they are, the fall budget town halls are specifically focused on housing and kind of what we're able to do with the funding we have. And so if this is a topic you are interested in talking more on, the places and dates are in your packet of materials. They do request that you RSVP and sign up before, but there's one in every ward coming up.
Thanks, Ann. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi, Nicole. Just to piggyback on Mindy's question and appreciation, of course, for this work, has the governor's office or folks at the state level seen the plan, and what are some opportunities for leveraging additional funding, perhaps not federal funding, but state funding?
So no, they haven't. That's a great idea. I'm not sure. I have been working really closely with the housing staff at the county. And so I'm not an expert on state level funding for housing. But certainly, we will, take this as a cue to pitch this to them as well.
I think Alan was next and then Ray.
Thank you, Jay. Nicole, I do appreciate the level of effort that's obviously been given to getting this plan to this point. It's enormous. And the kind of money you're talking about is huge. The fact that it only meets a certain percentage of need is no fault of the plan or the funds. It's just how life is. And, we have an overwhelming problem, and to do anything about the problem is obviously positive, even if it's not what we want to do in full. So I just want to make that comment. And my question kind of is, I'm a lawyer at Southern Arizona Legal Aid, and my practice area is doing eviction defense. And so I work with EELS on a regular basis. They're a grant funder of our work. And so I was interested to hear comments about EELS, and it's going to be level funding, if I heard that correctly. And I just want to emphasize, I'm not trying to change, reinvent the wheel here. You've done work. I'm not saying you did it wrong or anything. But my comment is that it's a dramatic difference in tenants having a lawyer and not having a lawyer. And it is proved time and time again. I can give you examples, but people get evicted where they wouldn't if they had a lawyer. And EELS is doing that, sort of limited. And I understand EELS sends a postcard to everybody who's an eviction defendant saying you can have a lawyer if you contact us, and they get maybe 30 calls a day, and there might be as many as 75 or 90 cases a day. So they're just they're hearing from a fraction of the tenants. I don't know why. So I'm just thinking if there's a way to expand deals and get more people out there. And part of the problem is the eviction process happens so fast, and to mail someone a postcard while it's a fast process, they might get the postcard on the day that the hearing is, and it just makes it impossible to obtain a lawyer that way. Anyway, those are my comments. I think EELS is a fantastic program. If we could do something to expand it, it would be a big help.
Thank you, Alan. And also, if we see a significant increase in evictions because of changes in the economy, this plan would allow us to then, anyway, so I would say the Regional Housing Commission, which the city has four seats on, will make a recommendation every year on the budget. So if we need to increase the amount for EELS in a given year or over several years, that can still happen. This is just a general guide over the 10 years, but EELS is an incredible program and has been just very successful. So I think yes, we could definitely if we see the need, increase it.
Go ahead, Ray.
Thank you so much for your work on this. My question is mostly around the other things that help to make this funding more effective. like using that last conversation about eels, for example. I'm wondering what kind of analysis there already has been done or could be done to say, and this is what it would be if we extended the eviction timeline, this amount of time, of how much money that would save our government in emergency eviction legal services, in cash assistance to prevent evictions, in the cost of people being houseless. We're spending a lot of money on things that there are upstream solutions to, and I know isn't in the power of the city and the county. And I'm not holding anyone in this room responsible for that. And I think it's an important part to have as part of our cost analysis to be building that case for state level change of we're spending a lot on things that sometimes some of that we do need to spend on, but some of it, if you could get a little bit more time, like eels money could be so much more effective. People just having that extra amount of time to not have just that 5 days for the eviction, to really be able to figure things out more. Yeah, I'd love to see that as part of the continual analysis of the cost effectiveness of these programs. Thank you.
And I would say to that point, right, like we're going to come back with strategies. So the strategy side of this, like the sort of non-funding side strategy. So maybe that needs to be one of our strategies, you know, under evictions that's part of the larger plan and the non-funding portion of the plan.
Any one detailed thing I could add to that that I've said a lot of times in this group, but we'll say once more, is it's a decision at the local level, not at the state level, to get the eels number on the notice of eviction. Notices are being sent only in English and they don't include the eels numbers. Again, a no cost solution to that to change that requirement, I think could really go a long way.
Thanks, Ray. Go ahead, Kenny.
Hi, thanks for the presentation, Nicole, and just really appreciate the county's initiative and first like securing the funding in the first place and having a really well thought out plan to build more housing and keep people housed. I guess my comments kind of align with the last couple as well. Just thinking about the how to connect some of the conversations that might have been had in developing the plan about what state level barriers might be in place to prevent other strategies that might have been in discussion. So I think of rent stabilization, inclusionary housing. And we've been talking a little bit about, you know, public information and education around some of the ways that local and county governments are constrained by what's happening at the state house. And so I'd be curious to hear more about what's kind of been in discussion. You know, what should people be hearing about? Yeah, we'd love to do this, but our hands are kind of tied, or this would be a pretty effective response to some situations that we're seeing. But you know, just kind of need to get the word and public support around.
Thanks, Kenny. Any other questions or comments? I have a few if there's nobody else. I don't see any other hands raised. I have a one question, maybe it's two, but you know, I know that you talked about how this $250 million plan relates to what the county has spent previously. And I saw that, but I didn't totally get it. Is there a percentage wise, like how much more is the county spending on this $250 million plan compared to what the status quo has been? Is it like 3 times as much money over 10 years, or 20 times, or, you know, like, could you quantify that a little differently?
Yeah, so if you and so I have to I can't give you one number. I'll kind of try and talk you through this, but if let's say it's 25 million a year, so 250 divided by 10 years, so 25 million a year. For the last 3 years, we've had 5 million a year compared to that 25 million that we've mostly been spending on the sort of build more to develop rental housing and new home ownership opportunities. So that's 5 million versus the 25, but we've also been spending 3 million a year on EELs, which is a combination of $1 million on the legal services and $2 million on the rental assistance. So that's $8 million versus the $25 million. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. So the Craycroft at $1.1 million, which was state funding. So that's So maybe we're doing like $9 million versus the $25 million. Maybe that's the increase, but that's considering what the county was putting in and some federal and state funding into the EELS side. So maybe it's 2.5 times more than what we were doing. Just trying to think of it through.
Yeah, yeah, no, that makes
sense. It's a good question though, to be able to articulate what the increase is. Okay.
Yeah, so it seems like 2 to 3 times as much as what the county has been spending yearly. I think that's a good number to have. And then how does this plan interact or interface with various city plans, City of Tucson plans, or other jurisdictions around in Pima County? You know, how are those plans taken into consideration? How are they weaving together? I know the cross jurisdiction stuff can be challenging, but I was just curious as to how this interacts with the various other jurisdictions in the county.
You know, each of the presentations that we've made to our housing commission on various strategies, we've tried to pull in the various cities and towns that are already working in that particular strategy. So if you're thinking about like low income rental development, you know, both the city and county are doing that. A lot of, I would say, out of the last 3 years, the number of projects that we've funded, gap funding projects, I think, so, and Sophia's on the call, I think she said it was 90% of it was, or 90% of the projects were within the City of Tucson. Let me say it that way. Then we had one in Marana and one in unincorporated Pima County. So there's a lot of similarities in the rental housing development side. When you look at the home repair and weatherization, I'll provide that example with the town of Marana. So the Marana now has a small program. And when you look at what they're doing and how much, you know, what their cost per unit is and why they think that's important, that's very similar to the city and county. The city's HAST plan, I believe, was mainly focused in the new development area. Anne, am I getting that right?
New development and preservation of existing affordable housing.
Got it. I think that we'll see a lot of similar strategies on our sort of build more side in our regional that are similar to the HAST plan strategies in that area. And then our plan also includes the keeping people housed side also. I don't know. Anne, I'm trying to think of others that are here from the city. I don't think we have conflicting objectives or anything like that.
No, and I think I would just take it one step further and say I've been super grateful at Pima County staff in terms of our collaboration and really working together. And I think Knights and the Craycroft is a perfect example of that, where we used regional Home American Rescue Plan dollars to purchase it, which is part of the city-county consortium funding. And at the time, Pima County didn't want to own it. We're okay owning these properties, but they wanted to operate. So I feel like we are able to collaborate in a way that I haven't had with county partners in the past. And so super grateful for all the work that Pima County has been doing and including us. And even coming here this evening, I think, is that sort of symbol of, hey, we want your feedback too.
That's great. Thank you for that. And then, another thing that I'm thinking about is, the 32,000 units. And I think you mentioned, Nicole, that the majority of those units would be built in the city of Tucson. Did I hear that correctly? One of the things that, from a fair housing perspective that I'm always curious about and, want to see, taken care of is, just where this housing is being built. I mean, this is just my perspective, but I think a lot of the ways that The city and county have grown over the years, like many cities have been quite inequitable to the urban core. And so I'm just curious about, has there been any discussion about where new affordable housing will be built within the city of Tucson? Is there any discussion about, you know, maybe expanding it to more opportunity rich areas that are outside of the city, and kind of how that mix has been discussed or thought about, or if, just again, where these units will be built, how they will affect segregation and access to opportunity?
Yeah. So what I've learned going through this process is a lot of this is built, is impacted by the LIHTC, the Low Income Housing Tax Credit Program, right? And so there are areas that are outside of the city of Tucson that are called out as difficult to develop areas. One large area in Marana, where you get, and I'm not going to get this exactly right, but bonus points, or your application is more competitive if you're in that area, or if you're basically in a qualified census tract that is mostly in the city of Tucson. So we would love to see more affordable housing built in a variety of places across the county. But some of it is really out of our control, because it has to do with these low income housing tax credits, which provide so much of a source of funding for this. So we did fund and provide gap funding for the Safford, which was a large rental housing development project just north of Continental Ranch in the town of Marana. It may be that we have more control over the non-LIHTC projects and where they go by how we write requirements in our request for proposals. So that's maybe some of the smaller projects like Habitat for Humanity projects. And we had a successful one of those that was funded up in Northwest Tucson and unincorporated Pima County. So we are trying, and I think I talked to you specifically, Jay, about the Prosperity Initiative, and it's really a goal of ours to increase housing in these, in a variety of areas, especially higher opportunity areas and higher income areas. It just sometimes the IRS is not on the same side as us.
The devil is in the details, is there?
Yeah.
And then I guess my final question is, kind of to that same end, has there been much thought put into at this point, how all of this interacts with transportation? Obviously, there's a lot going on with RTA in the next, potential 20-year plan, and, getting to and from, and, having access to opportunity obviously depends on your access to transportation in a car-dependent metro area like ours. Is that playing at all into the planning and kind of how this may play out in the future?
So I think I would turn that back over to the city too, because I think the city also being a housing developer is prioritizing areas. So when they're applying for funds, they are prioritizing areas along major transportation routes that have transit access and so on. But let me see if the city has something to say about that.
Yeah, and I would agree wholeheartedly. That's something when we're looking in areas of opportunity, but as Nicole just said, the tax credits have an inherent conflict. But as we're looking to sell single family homes, access to transit was one of those specific features we looked at for whether we should sell it or keep it for those reasons.
Great, thank you.
And Pima County is also trying to follow suit with the city with various zoning code changes to facilitate more housing in those areas. It's just if we allow that, but then it's not one of those LIHTC eligible areas, it may not actually see the type of subsidized housing that we're looking for in this particular funding plan, but it may see more diverse housing types that are non-subsidized that still may be more affordable and meet the needs of the community.
Great, thank you. Any other questions or comments, folks? Go ahead, Ray.
I appreciate that last point a lot of really looking at, right, how do zoning code changes, again, these no-cost solutions really help to reduce some of the cost here. Thinking to, right, being able to allow single-room occupancy and those like long-term, unsubsidized, affordable housing and ensuring that that's part of the mix and the solution.
Thanks, Ray. Any other questions or comments? Nicole, do you have any asks of the of our commission today or in the future as you move forward with this?
No, I mean, if there's if somebody really wants to get into the details and sit down with us and thinks that we should be funding one category at more than another category, I mean, please contact us. We'd like to come back again to your commission with the non-funding strategy side of this, if you have time on your next agenda.
Great. I would love to have you
Thank
back.
you.
All right. I think with that, we are likely done with this agenda item. So thanks so much, Nicole, for coming by and presenting and answering questions on the hot seat. All right. With that, we can move on to our next agenda item, and that is our discussion on our recommendations regarding homelessness that we would like to present to Mayor and Council. So the draft memo went out to everybody, and we all had a chance to provide feedback, comments, edits, et cetera. And I believe in your materials today, you saw the current working draft. It's not a whole lot different, I think, than what we've all been reviewing over the past few weeks. So really, I would like to open the floor up just to discuss where we are with the memo, if there are anything that folks want to add or comments, and talk about how we get our recommendations to Mayor and Council. So with that, I will open up the floor to discussion. Go ahead, Mindy.
Thank you, Jay. I wanted to share my deep appreciation for the incredible penmanship or woman, the writing of that draft.
Pen personship.
Yeah, to try to be conscious. It's so beautifully written. I was, yeah, thank you.
It is a testament to all of the folks on the commission who put time into the comments and the draft, and also the wonderful editor that is ChatGPT. So there you go.
That's
I mean, I'm not
what
saying I would ever use it, but I think maybe it has been used.
meeting my
So yeah, I appreciate that. Are there any thoughts about the content, anything that folks do not agree with, anything that needs to get changed, anything that we have omitted in this memo? This was taken from the memo or the draft that Jim and his subcommittee put together, and then my subcommittee, and then that was pretty much it. So it was a combination of those two documents at this point. Go ahead, Kenny.
Yeah, I just appreciate the work getting the memo together. It really covered a lot of our discussions. I think in the kind of the like early intervention strategies, something that we heard about was applying for utility assistance. It seemed like a detail worth adding to that and making that connection for risk of just prevention. And then in the public kind of education piece, sort of like my last comment on just having in mind both including the state level legal barriers that remove some options that could be implemented locally. Our colleagues at the Morrison Institute up at ASU have a pretty nice policy brief about a few of those. It's a couple years old now, but I'll put a link into the chat. And I thought it was a very balanced, they're a nonpartisan institute, and really thought it was a great brief summary report on some of those. And to include I think education on like compassionate responses to some of the homelessness that people encounter. Sometimes I worry about, just some of the news and stuff that's out there, and people want a way to feel empowered and engage people. So would advocate for that being included.
Thanks, Kenny. Anything else that we need to discuss about the memo? I think if there's not a lot of discussion today, I think that's fine. But maybe what we can do is, have another week after this meeting for any final comments or edits that people want to make. You can get those to me directly. You should have a copy of the memo as it is. And I can take some time to incorporate that. But if there's not a whole lot more discussion about the content of the memo, which of course we can keep talking about, maybe we can talk a little bit about how we want to present this to mayor and council, and what we did in the past when we put together a memo for mayor and council regarding affordable housing. The chair and the co-chair met with the mayor and talked about kind of the work that we've been doing and went over the memo as well, and then forwarded on to mayor and council. And I don't know if you have any additional information about kind of the process that we would go through to get this before mayor and council.
I think, like you said, Jay, we can send it out to the mayor and all the council offices. I think this time around, I would say one thing to consider, in addition to the mayor's office, it feels like, especially the new council folks that are just got elected, a couple of them really ran with a pro-housing platform. So I would say it's probably would make sense to try to get in front of them too, just as a commission.
Yeah, that sounds good. All right, y'all. I don't see a lot of discussion at this point, so I'm going to take that as meaning that the most folks. Yeah, right. Go ahead.
I'm wondering that if there's opportunities for it to be more than the chair and co-chair. I can imagine maybe not everyone is able to make that kind of meeting, but I would love to participate in conversations if that were permitted.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. The more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. So, for sure.
Hey, Anne, I had a quick question. When you said get in front of the new council members, do you think that would be like one-on-ones with each of those?
Yeah, I do. And, they'll be sworn in early December. So this would likely be a early 20, sometime in 2026 activity, but I think it could make sense. And, to your point, Ray, I think any council member could, I would say the commission shouldn't hesitate. They appoint many of you to serve on the commission. So I think if you have multiple people willing to meet with council members, I'd encourage you that it's something that I think they like hearing from city commissions every now and then. And then last time, just in addition, after you all met with the mayor's office, she did agendize it on a study session to talk through the commission's recommendations. And so that might be something when you do talk to the mayor.
So it sounds like maybe what we need to do is schedule meetings, or at least ask to schedule meetings with, maybe we just do it with all of the council offices and see if the various folks that have been appointed by the different council offices can go, and obviously if others want to go as well, and also meet with the mayor's office. And as I said, and as you said, Anne, to just let them know what we've been working on and the contents of this memo, and particularly with the new council members that will be sworn in. And then I guess the last kind of phase is what, get it into a study session, and maybe then a formal vote for mayor and council. And sounds like maybe that could be a plan of how we go about this. Any other thoughts about meeting with the council members and then moving it forward to the full mayor and council? Just kind of the strategy or the logistics of that. Obviously, you know, it's November, holidays are coming up, so we'll need to work around that. But, you know, just kind of the way that we've been working, I would say that, you know, this is, looks like maybe over the next 2 or 3 months that we would potentially be able to get that on the calendar, those various meetings, and get this before mayor and council. At least that's what I'd like. And then, you know, obviously, as we wrap up this work that we've been doing for the past, you know, year or so, we have been talking, or at least thinking about talking about kind of what we do as a commission in 2026. Obviously, that's not on our agenda today, but certainly something that we need to be thinking about. Maybe from here, we can go ahead and move into the next agenda item, which is to review the CEHD schedule for 2026. But before we do that, I just want to give one last opportunity to comment or, you know, for any discussion about the memo. And like I said, I think after this, there'll still be time to provide comments. Obviously, you can reach out to me directly, shoot me an email with comments in the document. And as long as they're not, you know, really big major changes, I think we'll just consider going with them and kind of take it from there. So there will be a little bit of time, you know, after this to make some minor corrections. But are there any final comments or any final discussion about the memo? Okay, hearing none, let's move on to the next agenda item. Obviously, we are quite ahead of schedule at this point. We wanted to take a minute to review our schedule for 2026. We just wanted to get it out there so folks could look at their calendars, put the dates on their calendars. Obviously, you know, we want to make sure that we're being respectful of religious holidays and other things that are going on, some of which we missed this past year, unfortunately, but in the spirit of respecting all of those dates and holidays and whatnot, that's why we're putting this out. So, you know, obviously, if there's anything that jumps out to you now about the schedule, you know, please let us know. But obviously, the point is that, you know, we all have some time to look over this, look at our schedules, and give some feedback about these dates. And obviously, these dates are subject to change, kind of as we need to. Yeah, go ahead, Mindy.
Thank you, Jay. I am remiss in not having reviewed the dates to my calendar. I would like to have until next month to look at it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Thank you for your sensitivity about that. It brings even a bigger kind of contextually a conversation of all cultures. You know, so I will look carefully at the calendar to make sure it's not falling on Ramadan or other major. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And obviously, I appreciate that, Mindy. You know, obviously, we're trying to be sensitive, and, you know, the point is that, you know, everybody can take a look at this. And yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, we can take a month, but, you know, the idea is just that everybody has a chance to look it over and alert us to, you know, any conflicts of that nature so we can, you know, change our schedule around.
Appreciate the due diligence. We did do a bit of a spot check on school calendars and some of the major holidays, but having other commissioners also, the commissioners also provide some of that extra due diligence for us would be awesome. Thanks.
Thanks, Manisha. Any other thoughts or comments at this point about our upcoming schedule? I know it's a lot of dates to review, so no worries if not, but just want to give everybody a chance to comment before we move on.
Jay, if no one else has any comments too, I did have a quick low-hanging fruit, I think, is just the first commission date of the year is January 1st, so New Year's Day. Just wondering if commissioners just wanted to think of maybe pushing it back like a week or two. Just thinking since that will be like the first commission date of the year.
Or we could just ask commissioners to moderate their alcohol consumption and meet on the first anyway.
I was gonna say, or we could all just be hungover.
No, I think that's a great idea. Would that I wonder if we should maybe send out an email to everybody, or I don't know, if we can do that now, just for
Yeah.
some people's schedules.
Sure, I'm happy to send out a doodle poll to see if commissioners would like pulling up my calendar really quick. If they'd like it on like the 8th or the 15th, or maybe I could put in a different date that's not a Thursday and just see, get a temperature check.
Yeah, and we can talk about that tomorrow when we meet for our debrief.
Perfect. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you. All right. If there's nothing else on this agenda item, we can move right along. And I know I've said this before, but we might actually get out a decent number of minutes early today. So with that, I'll move on to city and county updates. Go ahead, HCD.
All right, I'm bringing the document. I really appreciate Rachel and Manisha and everyone that puts this document together. I won't go through all of it though, if anyone has questions. I'm happy to talk about it. But I think the big comment I made earlier is that there are various budget town halls scheduled. The focus is on housing. It's called the Housing Equation Budget Forums. And so there's one in every ward, though 2 and 4 are combined. And they start Monday evening at 6 p.m. So appreciate that Rachel put in a chat in the link where you can learn more and sign up. And again, happy to answer questions as I go through these. Another important item that I did want to bring up, and perhaps it's something we can talk about at the December meeting, and I invite Corinne to speak on this too, but at the October 21st mayor and council meeting, they discussed likely declaring an emergency housing declaration. I know this is something this commission has talked about several times. So, perhaps at the next meeting, we can have an agenda item where it'll be a, we do plan on bringing it back to Mayor and Council in December at the December. I don't know the date off the top of my head, December 16th meeting. So there won't be much turnaround between the early December meeting, but I think it would be worth talking through as this commission has been talking about that. I will say, on a fun note, we celebrated our ribbon cutting of the playground that is open, now open at Wildcat Inn. So it was an awesome event. So we have a new playground for all the children that are there at the emergency shelter. There's shade over the playground, and then the city's Storm to Shade program built green stormwater infrastructure around the playground rather than asphalt. And so it's really cool. And on it, on any given night, we usually have between 50 and 60 kids. And so something that I think is a real plus for that site. And then we continue to have, so the city's working on several housing initiatives right now, several housing projects. We had a meeting last night related to our South 10th project. We will have a meeting and we can send out information about it, but we'll be starting outreach on the Stone and Speedway project. It's part of our Choice Neighborhoods plan, but the southwest corner of Stone and Speedway, a lot that's been vacant forever, ever. And so we will be doing engagement on that in November. And then we will return. We have a project that is in both Barrio Anita and El Presidio neighborhoods. And so we've had an initial outreach meeting there, and we plan on returning to the neighborhoods based on the feedback they've given us with revised concepts in early December. So that's what I have. If anyone at HCD has anything I missed, feel free to jump in and happy to answer any questions.
I would love to remind folks, hi all, the point in time count is coming up in January. So we just opened our registration yesterday for our team leads. So they are hopefully registering now. And then in December, we'll open up our general registration for all of the rest of the volunteers. So the point in time count will be happening on January 28th, which is the last Wednesday of January. So if anybody is interested in participating in that, I am happy to send you the registration when that opens. But that will be a big event coming in January. So that's it.
Thanks, Kat.
Thank you.
Anything else from HCD? All right, PDSD, you're up.
Thanks, Jay. So our good news is that Proposition 417, which is Plan Tucson 2025, was approved by the voters this week in the election. We're really happy with that result. The plan includes a lot of strategies for housing development and housing equity, and really incorporates a lot of the goals of the housing affordability strategy for Tucson and other housing related plans into our overall plan for this city. And so it really kind of elevates those policy goals around housing because they've now been ratified by voters. So we're very happy with that. And thank you all for your participation. Many of you are very involved in developing Plan Tucson, so we really appreciate that. The other item I want to provide an update on is our middle housing code amendment that's currently under review. We'll be presenting this proposal to the Planning Commission next week, and they'll be holding a public hearing on this code amendment. So this code amendment would allow middle housing, which is duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, and townhouses, in more of the city. So it would create an area of the city where this housing type would be allowed, and makes it easier to build middle housing in that area, and also citywide through some other zoning changes to make it easier to build middle housing in areas that already allow it. So again, this will be presented to Planning Commission next Wednesday, November 12th. The meeting is at 6 p.m. at the Mayor Council Chambers and is also online. It's a public hearing, so you are welcome to speak. The public is welcome to speak or submit letters and comments to the Planning Commission in advance. Following that Planning Commission hearing, we hope to take this to Mayor and Council for their review and a public hearing in December.
Hey, Corin. Sorry. Just really quick, I do want to remind commissioners that they did send a letter of support for middle housing. So thank you for that.
Yes, thank you for that letter from the commission. You're also welcome to attend as commission members, maybe to have somebody share that letter, or as, you know, stakeholders and advocates for housing. Those are our updates.
All right. Thanks so much, Corn. Next, Pima County updates. Do we have anybody here from Pima County to give us?
I'm here, Chairman Young. I submitted our updates in writing, but I did want to mention that we've got $3.5 million of funding for keeping people housed, and it is not going to surprise you all that it is flying out the door. This was as of like 2 days ago, $200,000 in rental assistance, $130,000 in utility assistance, and $12,000 in mortgage assistance. And then our community development team has done $200,000 in weatherization and repair, serving 11 households. And our rapid rehousing is working with shelter partners all across the region to serve. We have 13 households in the pipeline for that, and one has been rehoused. One thing that I just found out about an hour ago is that we are actually extending our deadline for our gap funding RFP to November 14th. So everyone has another week to get their applications in for that. And then Nicole did your showed you the regional housing funding plan, and then the next thing we'll be presenting to you all after we present to our commission will be our strategies. And then we just did our roadshow. Echo Northwest came out to do like a final round of community engagement to just kind of show what the study had found and get just that last little bit of feedback from our community. And it was really successful. We had Table at Tucson Meet Yourself. We went to events in Marana, Sahuarita, Ajo, and some other spots like Green Valley to get around the whole county. And I think that's pretty much my update. Does anybody have any questions on that?
Thanks so much, Sophia. Any questions? All right. Hearing none, I think we can move on to the next agenda item, which are our next steps. Let's see. We have upcoming subcommittees and working group meetings, equitable housing strategies, November 18th, affordable housing, November 19th. The mobile housing working group is rescheduling. Do you have an update on that, Ray, or are you still rescheduling?
We will be rescheduling that one to either the week before or the week after, because it's on a federal holiday.
Got it. Thanks. And then Housing First is scheduled for November 25th. The next Pima County Housing Commission meeting is Friday, November 21st at 8:30 a.m. And then our next commission meeting is Thursday, December 4th from 4 to 6 p.m. That is it for the next steps. Is there anything that we are missing or other next steps that we have not covered?
Jay, just one more thing I forgot to mention. I mentioned the South 10th project. This is a large site, 12.3 acres. We have a request for qualifications out now for a co-developer. So if any of you have folks that you feel like could be good to help develop 300 to 400 units of housing on a large city-owned site near downtown, please, please, please share the RFP. We'll send it out to all of you.
Thanks, Anne. Anything else, y'all, before we wrap up for the evening? All right, with that, we will end the meeting 45 minutes early. Enjoy your evening, and we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Jay.